Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 66. I'm recording it on Tuesday, December 30th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. That means that stocks purchased at today's price levels offer a strong long-term value proposition. The title of this podcast is Bogle on Minsky. We have met the market, and he is us. I've been arguing for some time on discussion boards and in podcasts and in articles at the site that what we need to escape the market crisis, the stock market crisis, the economic crisis we're living through today is recognition that the passive investing model of understanding how stock investing works has failed. And what I believe, I have made the case, that all the information we need to invest effectively, to invest successfully, to never again have the type of horrible bull market we experienced in the 1990s, and to never again experience the horrible price crash that we've experienced in the past year, and the possible, well, the economic recession that has resulted from it, the possible economic depression that it may ultimately lead to, that all we need to do to avoid all that is to begin talking about stock investing in reasonable, sensible, realistic ways, that all of the information we need is publicly available. It's all on the internet. There's been research done dating back to 1981 by Robert Shiller and by many others showing that the efficient market theory is nonsense. It was not always nonsense. It was one time viewed as a very serious idea, but it has been proven to be nonsense by the academic research. And that the conclusions that we drew from the efficient market theory, that timing does not work, timing the market does not work, are completely false. That the reality is that short-term timing does not work, and that's, of course, an important insight, but that long-term timing does work and always has worked. Long-term timing is when you change your stock allocation because prices have reached insanely dangerous levels, with the understanding that there may be 3 or 4 or 5 years when the market will remain irrational and you will not receive an immediate payment, but then in the immediate benefit for doing so. But in the long term, you are sure to benefit from investing rationally. Rationally, and investing rationally means changing your stock allocation in response to dramatic price changes, trying to keep your risk level roughly constant, ignoring the advice of passive investors not to change your allocation, and doing just the opposite, always changing your allocation when necessary to keep your risk level roughly constant. I believe that once that message is spread far and wide, faith can be restored in the stock market. We currently are at fair valuation, so there's no reason why stocks cannot, from this point, begin to provide good returns on a going forward basis. We have, of course, all the things that make up our economy remain in place. All the buildings are still there. The most important thing in an economy is the intelligence of the workforce and the industry of the workforce. And we're just as industrious as ever. We're just as ambitious as ever. We're just as intelligent as ever. None of those things have changed. So there's no reason why, obviously, the price crash, well, it's obvious to those who follow the rational investing model, but it wasn't obvious to some, I understand. The price crash was required, because we had allowed prices to get to insanely high levels. And so we, of course, the market would have collapsed had we not experienced this price crash. So that was required, and we should frankly be glad about it. I don't mean to say we should be glad about the suffering that people have endured, but we certainly should be glad that the market has survived, and the market obviously could not have survived had prices never returned to reasonable levels. So we should celebrate the price drop, that we now can invest in stocks again and receive strong long-term returns. That's a good thing. To be in that never-never land where we could never again receive good returns from stock investing was horrible for every single middle-class worker because it meant that we could never provide for our retirements. We, of course, should have never gotten, we never should have tolerated that bull market in the first place. People, responsible people, should have been speaking up, but that's water over the bridge. Today, we have to say, you know, what can we do today? And what we have done collectively is we have brought stock prices down dramatically. We're now in a much, much better place than where we were from 1995 through the first part of 2008. What concerns me today is that we are not celebrating this. And of course, a big reason is that we're getting over the shock. We've all experienced massive losses in our wealth, in our life savings, and we're paying the inevitable price for that insane bull market, for our tolerance of that insane bull market, and for our encouragement of it, frankly. You know, let's be honest. All of us who advocated passive investing encouraged that insane bull market. Passive investing encourages irresponsible investing practices. Passive investing is the model of stock investing that says valuations don't matter. You can stay with the same stock allocation regardless of how insanely high prices go. So I am not an advocate of passive investing, to be sure, but I am a big advocate of stock investing. And I have argued that what we need, the problem, what we are suffering from today, it's not an intellectual problem. The intellectual work has all been done. We've known that passive investing could not work, as I say, dating back to the 1980s. It's just that we haven't been willing to acknowledge it because it's painful. It's embarrassing to have made such an error. The passive investing advocates have made a terrible error, and a very, very basic error. It's, you know, the idea that valuations affect long-term returns is certainly not a complicated point. It's the most basic point that there is. But sometimes the most basic things are the most important, and sometimes the most basic things are the things that are most easily overlooked, and that's what's happened. The passive investing advocates got very excited by the studies on the efficient market theory that came out in the 60s and 70s that showed, you know, the good side of this development, and that showed that short-term timing doesn't work, and that helped them to put together the elements of the passive investing model that have stood the test of time, the elements that actually work, indexing, all this sort of thing. So, not paying attention to the short-term noise, all that sort of thing. So we now are at a stage where we need to acknowledge the errors and then go forward, regain confidence in the markets, become productive again, you know, get out of this, you know, we're now in an emotional depression and we don't want it to lead to an economic depression. So how do we do that? My argument has been what we need are some big name experts, people who, many others have confidence in, to come forward and to acknowledge the mistakes, at the very least to acknowledge that they are not as confident as they once were, to come forward and say, look, we thought this was right. We started having doubts in the 1980s. We were reluctant to come forward. The doubts have grown larger and larger. There's now a mountain of evidence that valuations affect long-term returns. And starting now, we're going to be a little less dogmatic. We're not going to argue that people shouldn't adjust their stock allocations. We're not going to argue that timing doesn't work anymore. We're not going to argue that it's possible to stay the course without adjusting your stock allocation when necessary. We're going to back off the dogmatism. Some of us still believe in passive investing, but we're going to back off the dogmatism. I've argued that this is the change we need to get back on track. And I've argued that the best person to lead that change is John Bogle, because John Bogle, he's perfectly positioned. John Bogle is Mr. Passive Investing. He's the strongest advocate of passive investing alive today. And he's also, you know, this is the other side of the story. Bogle is also one of the lead proponents of rational investing. All of my ideas on stock investing have their origins in John Bogle's book, Common Sense on Mutual Funds. I read it back in the mid-1990s. Bogle taught me how stock investing works in the real world. And then just following what he said, you know, I've learned, you know, much more about the subject in the years since. So my I would certainly not say today that the take that I offer in investing is strictly a Bogle take. That's certainly not the case. But it is all informed by Bogle, and there's no question but that Bogle is a lead influence, one of the three lead influences. I would say it's a mix of Buffett, Bogle, and Shiller. The rational investing model is a mix of those three, the principal ideas of those three. And of course, personally, I've been educated by the research of John Walter Russell, who is the researcher who has really helped the retire early and indexing communities come to understand how stock investing works in the real world. So with those four are the influences. But Bogle is certainly a primary one. So what I have argued is that Bogle is perfectly positioned to get us out of this mess, because Bogle understands both sides. Bogle understands the passive investing mindset. He created it. But he also understands the rational investing mindset. Bogle argues forcefully over and over and over again that valuations affect long-term returns. So he's perfectly positioned to be the bridge from the passive investing era, which was a failure, to the rational investing era, which I believe will be the golden age of investing for the middle-class investor. The we need a focus on the positive when things are so dark. You know, when people were pretending that valuations didn't matter and that somehow there wasn't going to be a price crash, then we needed a bit of a focus on the dark side. We needed people to tell us the realities. That's what was needed. Well, today, people know about the dark side. You don't need to stress that. What we need to stress today is the bright side. And the bright side is humans learn through pain. I wish it wasn't so, but it is. We learn through pain. We've experienced great pain, all of us, every single one of us, even the rational investors, even those who had gone with low stock allocations because of the dangers that we knew existed. Even we have experienced pain. You know, rational investors have lost their jobs. People who were going with low stock allocations because they understood the dangers have lost their jobs because of this recession. They've seen their neighbors. Maybe they've seen their housing values go down as a result of the passive investing era. You know, all the deceptions that and self-deceptions that went with that. They've seen and which led to the overpricing of housing and then the crash in housing prices. They've seen friends or neighbors have their businesses fail. So all these things we've all suffered. We've all suffered together, and we all need to get through this together. And Bogle is just perfectly positioned to lead us out of the wilderness, to lead us to a better place. The good side is that by suffering this pain, more and more of us every day are open to acknowledging the mistakes we've made. The big problem has been this. It's not an intellectual problem. The big problem is the emotional problem. How do we work up the courage to say, I was wrong, that passive investing doesn't work, that stay the course requires changing your stock allocation from time to time, that timing is required for the long-term investor, that not only is timing not a bad idea, long-term timing is required for the successful long-term investor. How do we get to a point where we can say, I was wrong? Bogle, I believe, could take us there. If Bogle needs to set the example, if Bogle says, I was wrong, there are many of his followers who will also say, I was wrong. If Bogle says, you know, when I talked to Michael Kitsis, one of the things he told me is he said, a lot of financial planners today are starting to have doubts about passive investing. And I said, Michael, that's so wonderful. This is what we've been waiting for. But, you know, I think it's fair to say that, he didn't give me a lot of names. He didn't say, here's a list of 10 of them, and I'm going to get them all posting at your site so that we can learn what they're coming up with. No, a lot of people, the experts, the so-called experts, they know that this system has failed. They know this model has failed. Bill Bangin, I've talked about it on an earlier podcast. He knows it's failed. Bill Bangin is the author of one of the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. Bill Bangin has taken his clients' money out of stocks. He knows passive investing has failed. He won't say it. He'll say, oh, I'm still a passive investor. But if you're a passive investor, then why have you gone to a zero stock allocation? You know, it just does not follow. But he's trying to protect his client's money. He's trying to do the right thing without having to give up this model that he's emotionally invested in. But what we really need to do is to give up the model, because once we give up the model, we can start talking sense again about investing. We can move forward. We can move forward 30 years in one day, because we've got 30 years of academic research that's being ignored by most of the big name experts. They know about it. It's hard for me to imagine they don't know that it exists. They know about it. Rob Arnott told us as much when he said that he asked for a show of hands on how many of the 200 academic researchers at a conference, how many believe in the efficient market theory, and not one raised their hand. So they know, but they can't talk about it because it's taboo. If you point out the failings of passive investing comes crashing to the ground. And so it's something we don't do, but it's something we need to do. We need to end this pain. We need to stop the market from going even lower. And the way to do that is to restore people's confidence. So I've been hoping that Bogle would make a statement along these lines, either a I was wrong statement, which would be the best, or somewhat not as good, but I think it would get the job done, and I don't know statement. If Bogle were just to say, I don't know, I may have gotten some things wrong. I don't know, but I'm not having doubts. That in itself, I think, would be enough. Well, Bogle made a statement in indexuniverse.com. It's an article written by Bogle called A Minsky Meltdown. And it's at indexuniverse.com. It's dated Tuesday, December 30th. And so I'm going to read a little bit of it, but Bogle talks about Minsky. Minsky is a very, very, very bright analyst and economist, Hyman Minsky. He died in 1996, but I am not super familiar with Minsky's work, but I have read articles about it. I've read excerpts of it, and he's a very, very smart guy. If you want to learn how stock investing works, Google the name Minsky and see what you come up with, and you'll learn important stuff. So Bogle's responding to that, but I'm not thrilled with the way he responds to it, and so I want to point out why that is so. And Bogle says here, what we are increasingly seeing is the verification of the, quote, the financial instability hypothesis put forward by economist Hyman Minsky. In 1992, Minsky warned that, quote, capitalist economies exhibit debt deflations, which spin out of control as the economic system's reactions to a movement of the economy amplify the movement. Government interventions aimed to contain the deterioration are often inept in historical crises. I'm reading from Bogle. Minsky concluded that over long periods of prosperity, the economy transits from financial structures that make for a stable system to ones that make for an unstable system, i.e., that stability leads to instability, largely through what he described as hedging, speculation, and Ponzi finance. In that sense, Minsky was a prophet of one of today's economic crises. That sounds good to me. So I'm glad to see Bogle, looking at Minsky. But what I think is lacking here is what Bogle is not doing. He's placing the blame everywhere but with himself. He's placing the blame on others. You know, he's saying, oh, there are all these bad people he doesn't give names, but he seems to be saying that all sorts of people that give investing advice and all sorts of funds, they're bad people. You know, these are bad people. And this is a turnoff to me. It's certainly not only John Bogle doing this. I'm seeing it every day. I look at a certain number of articles on investing, whatever I have time for, every day, and you're just seeing this everywhere. You're seeing this everywhere. Pointing the finger. And I take investing and I try to look at it from a more personal, a more emotional standpoint, because I think emotion is the key. Understanding human emotion is the key to understanding stock investing. I believe that emotion is 70% of the game, and the intellectual part of stock investing is 30% of the game. And 90% of the literature is aimed at understanding the 30% problem, the intellectual part, and 10% is aimed at understanding the investing, the emotional part, which is the most important. So most investing literature, in my personal opinion, ignores the big issues. So we all human beings, all human beings, when something bad happens, if you raise kids, of course, this. Something falls to the ground. They knock the television over, and it breaks. And the first thing they do is, well, he did it. He pushed me. I told him he was standing too close. It's human nature to blame others for problems that develop. And so it's as human could be. I by no stretch of the imagination is it my intent to single out John Bogle and say John Bogle's the only person doing this. But he is doing it. He's writing this article. It's an intelligent article. On its own, it's fine. On its own merits. But what I don't like is that I wish he was writing a different article. I wish he was, instead of pointing the finger at all these bad guys, these institutional money manager bad guys, I'd like to see Bogle take a look at the man in the mirror. I would like to see John Bogle take a look at the man in the mirror. John Bogle is, he's part of this market. He's saying the market has done this to us. These people have done this to us. And these institutions have done this to us. Well, Bogle is part of an institution. Bogle founded Vanguard. And Vanguard promoted the passive investing concept for years, for decades. Bogle is part of the problem, a big, big, big part of the problem. He's also part of the solution, to be sure. That's the other side of the story. Bogle's writings can lead us out of this. And Bogle's been writing about the importance of valuations. I read about it in the mid-1990s, so he's obviously been writing about it for a long, long time. But Bogle's a big part of the problem. And when Bogle acknowledges that, that's when the door opens. And if you listen to the last podcast, Podcast 65, I was talking about how Bogleheads.org is starting to open up to honest posting on valuations. And, that's what I'm looking for. What I'm looking for is looking at the man in the mirror. And I see some of that going on at Bogleheads.org nowadays. Not as much as I would like, but frankly, more than I expected in this amount of time. So I was very pleased to see that. And I don't see too much of that in this article by Bogle. So while it's if it were written at a different time in a different place, it would be fine. There would be nothing wrong with the article. Talking about Minsky is a positive. Minsky is great. I need to educate myself more about Minsky's thinking, and I think we all do. But I don't like this tone in the article of pointing fingers at others. I would rather see a confessional piece in which Bogle says, this is an article. Oh, I would just love to see this would be this. This I would love to see this as a cover article in Money Magazine. Bogle looks within and tells us what he's gotten wrong. What does John Bogle think about John Bogle's investing advice? Does he think he got it all right? Does he think he made some big mistakes? I would like to see that question addressed. And, not because I'm mean, not because I don't like John Bogle, because I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy for John Bogle. I think it's healthy for the Bogleheads. I think it's healthy for all middle-class investors. I think it's what we need. And we don't need it just from John Bogle. We need it from Rob Bennett. I don't exclude myself. I try to do that. If you listen to the podcast, I think from time to time, I try to look at things I've done wrong, mistakes I've made. I try. None of us are ever going to be perfect at that. It's against human nature. But we all need to try. And I would like to see all the leading experts do this. All of them. Bill Bernstein, Scott Burns, Jonathan Clements, Robert Shiller, John Russell, Rob Arnott, You know, how about if we all take up the challenge of looking at the man in the mirror? What have we gotten wrong? Boy, talk about your investing revolutions. I think that changes overnight. If we could do that, it's not hard to do. It doesn't take any great strength. It doesn't take any great education. It takes courage. It takes courage. Let me get to some specifics here to, you know, flesh this out a bit, what I'm really getting at. This phrase of the article is what made me jump. Here's Bogle again. He says, as the woes of our... Here's one sec. I'll read actually two paragraphs. One paragraph is he's saying, yet it is not Wall Street, but the ordinary citizens of the United States who will foot the bill. So, you know, he's sort of blaming people there. Now, I do some of that myself. That's populist rhetoric. You know, that's what I see there. He's saying, oh, the ordinary citizens didn't do anything wrong. It's Wall Street. Well, yes and no. I mean, there's no question Wall Street has done bad things. And there's no question but that many hardworking, good people have suffered horrible pain as a result. So some populist rhetoric is called for. So to a point, I go with that. But where it leaves me cold is where it's not followed up by, you know, Bogle's planting himself among the ordinary citizens of the United States who will foot the bill. He's the good guy. And Wall Street's the bad guy. But, you know, Bogle is Wall Street. I mean, come on. Like, there was one of the guys at the Bogleheads.org community that I, you know, in the last podcast, 65, pointed that out. He said, yeah, you know, he said it's foolish to ignore the fact that Bogle is a millionaire and Bogle is in the stock selling industry. Doesn't mean he's a bad guy any more than any of all these other people are bad guys. It means that he's fallible. It means that he faces pressures to shade things certain ways. It means that he doesn't like to look at certain realities. Okay? That's the real world. Let's start talking real, because if we don't talk real, the train goes off the tracks and we're looking at some serious consequences if we don't start to talk real about this stuff. This is reality. Bogle can have all the best intent in the world, and if his followers worship him and call him Saint Jack, he's going to get things wrong. You know, we all need people bringing us down a peg, and that's one of the jobs of John Bogle's friends. I'm a John Bogle friend. I love John Bogle. He's one of my lead, you know, he's a hero of the first rank in Rob Bennett's estimation. But I'm a critic of John Bogle. Make no mistake. I like to think of myself as the harshest critic of passive investing alive on planet Earth today. And John Bogle is Mr. Passive Investing. So I am a critic as well as a friend. I see the two roles as absolutely complementing each other, in no way contradicting each other. So here's the meat. Here's the main paragraph. As the woes of our financial system resonate through our economy, it seems crystal clear that our current recession will intensify a, quote, Minsky meltdown of significant proportions. While I believe that something more serious, obviously a depression, is unlikely, we can't be sure whether our plummeting stock market has yet to adequately anticipate the depth of the economic downturn, B, has already anticipated it, or C, has anticipated something much worse than what is likely to transpire. So that's the guts of Bogle's advice here. What he's saying is, he really is covering all the bases, isn't he? He's saying either the market has over-anticipated the bad stuff, which means things are going to get a whole big bunch better real soon, or the market has anticipated it perfectly, which means things are going to sort of stay the way they are. Or the market hasn't anticipated it sufficiently yet, which means it's going to get a whole lot worse. Well, boy, I it's hard for me to imagine a scenario where anybody will be able to say that Bogle got that one wrong. Then Bogle says, I'm inclined to believe that the answer is somewhere between B and C, which are the more positive, the positive and neutral outcomes. Why? Because the market value of U.S. stocks has tumbled by 50% from $18 trillion to $9 trillion. And I just can't imagine that the value of American enterprise is $9 trillion lower than it was at the market high last October. I discussed that last comment in great depth in a podcast called Bogle and Valuations. Bogle is correct. The market value of U.S. stocks has tumbled, not quite 50%, but it's dropped by about $9 trillion. He's right. He's just rounding it off. And it is impossible to believe that the value of American enterprise is $9 trillion less than it was a year ago. I agree with that statement. I think he's absolutely correct. What's, of course, lacking here is Bogle doesn't say, was it $9 trillion overvalued a year ago or not? Of course, if you look at valuations, that's what you find. You look at the P10 value, you find that the market is today fairly valued at a P10 level of 15. The market was 15 months ago insanely overvalued. It was valued at double that. The P10 value, 15 months ago or so was 29, double what it is today. So the market was $9 trillion above fair value. So should we be shocked and amazed that it's fallen by $9 trillion when $9 trillion of it was just hot air? No, we should not be shocked and amazed. That's exactly what anyone who understood the basics of stock investing would have anticipated, that we were going to see a price crash. Bogle did not anticipate it. So I'm saying Bogle doesn't understand the basics of stock investing. Some people have a hard time with that. They say, how can you say that, Rob? You're some guy who posts on the internet. What do you know? Well, people are free to believe who they like. If you want to believe Bogle, believe Bogle. Bogle, he's a big shot. He's a big name expert. He's smart as all get out. He's a hero of mine. He's gotten a lot of things right. But I think Bogle was wrong not to look at valuations. I think passive investing is insane. And I think people should look at valuations, and all of the people who looked at valuations saw this coming. Robert Shiller certainly isn't surprised by this price crash. The guy who wrote the book Stock Cycles certainly isn't surprised. He said back in the year 2000 that money markets were going to beat stocks over the next 10 years. He was right. How did he know? What made him so smart? John Walter Russell knew this was coming. Rob Bennett knew it was coming. Rob Arnott knew it was coming. Cliff Asness saw it coming. How did all these people get so smart? They got smart. It's just, they're not smarter. It's just a question of, they looked at valuations and Bogle didn't. Bogle believes in passive investing. So he looks at valuations. I'm sure he sort of he pays some cursory attention to them. But if you believe in passive investing, you don't believe in changing your stock allocation with changes in valuation. So if you don't believe in doing it, why would you even bother learning much about valuations? What difference would it make? It's all immaterial to someone like Bogle. And Bogle believes in passive investing. He has bought into this hook, line, and sinker. So as smart as he is, he's not capable of processing the information. And that's why, frankly, I want him to put out this article saying what I got wrong, but he's not capable of it until he sees that he got it wrong. You see, this is all circular. If he would put out that article, millions of investors, what would happen? It would just be a flood of good stuff. If he put out that article on the cover story of Money Magazine, Bogle got wrong. All of these experts, these financial planners who are today having doubts about passive investing, they would come public. They'd say, hey, it's okay not to believe in passive investing. So they'd all come to my site and they'd say, Rob, I don't believe in passive investing. Here's why. And they'd write their article and it would just spread like wildfire. And then all the people at bogleheads.org would say, oh, duh, valuations matter. Duh, you need to change your allocation. Duh, how could I be so stupid? Now I get it. Mel Lindau would be saying, Rob, my old buddy, come back, friend. Hey, you're the one who told us about the safe withdrawal rate studies being wrong. And you're the one that told us that valuations affect long-term returns. You got any new calculators, my old friend? We'd all be buddies again, because we wouldn't have to pretend that we wouldn't have to be defensive. Once the mistake is acknowledged, it's all over. But people aren't going to do that until they hear somebody like Bogle do it. They need to hear a big shot do it. They're not going to believe some guy who posts on the internet That's not what humans do. They want to hear the experts say this. And the experts, a lot of them want to say it. You can tell. They're thinking about it. They're toying with the idea, but they're saying, I don't want to say it. I don't want to be the one to say Bogle got it wrong. Bogle, a lot of people believe in Bogle. I don't want to say, maybe I'll say it at a dinner meeting with some of my pals, but I don't think I want to be quoted saying John Bogle doesn't understand in stock investing. I mean, you know, who am I? That's our problem. It's a human problem. It's not an intellectual problem. It's a human problem. But Bogle can't say it, so we need Bogle to say it. But Bogle can't say it because Bogle believes in passive investing, and he looks at the stuff. He says, oh, here's this book by Robert Shiller, Irrational Exuberance. A lot of good reviews, been doing research for decades. He backs everything he says with historical data, smart as the Dickens, Yale professor, but good book, you know, well written, but it doesn't seem like he supports passive investing. Where's that book? Anybody got that book, A Random Walk Down Wall Street? I think I want to read that one again. That one makes me feel good. I'm an advocate of passive investing. Whenever I read that one all the time because it makes me feel good. The Shiller book, I don't know. There's something about it. It makes my tummy hurt. It's just not, I don't know. It's smart, but well written, but it's something in it makes my tummy hurt. You ever had that feeling, you know? He's talking to Bill Bernstein. Have you ever had the feeling, Bill, that this book Shiller wrote, something in it makes your tummy hurt? What's going on there, Bill? Any ideas? These are the kind, you know, I'm being funny, of course, but these are the kind of conversations that are going on the human level. Bogle is unsure of what he's recommended for three decades, and the evidence that it's wrong is just a mountain at this point. And the question is, how do we get from where we are to where we need to go? How do we make that transition? And the answer is, we need Bogle's help. He's the key. But Bogle needs our help. If the people at bogleheads.org would just say, look, all these comments are coming in, and we've got to go to Bogle and tell him, and we've got to get him to address this. I can't put the words into Bogle's mouth. I can't tell him what he needs to say. But he needs to let go of this pose that he's this big investing expert, and all the others need to do the same. They all need what we need is humility. Humility is the answer. People need to say he can say, look, I've studied investing for a long time. I have more experience. You know, I've managed these funds. All that's fine. But he needs to then say, but despite all that, it appears to me that our knowledge of how stock investing works is really very primitive. And it's not right to call me an expert in this day. No, I don't understand things well enough to be called an expert. That's a mistake. So here's the key that where Bogle gets it wrong. I feel like I walk around with X-ray vision. I learned this stuff the hard way. I learned it on discussion boards with passive investing dogmatists throwing rocks at me day in, day out for close to 7 years now. So when people are throwing rocks at you, you have to figure out how to get the shield up so that the rock hits the shield and not your head. And so I've spent all my free time developing better and stronger shields. You know, what are the answers? What are the answers to the things that passive investors say? And I think I know most of the answers today. I don't think you can come up with one that I haven't seen before. That's not to say all my answers are right. You know, I'm a human. I can get things wrong. So I'm not saying the answers are right. I'm saying I've thought through all the claims that they make, and I've come up with what I believe are good answers. Right or wrong, they've persuaded Rob Bennett enough that I'm willing to go public with them. Some of the questions still puzzle me, but I know a lot of things, or I believe I know a lot of things that I didn't believe I knew in May of 2002. So in my opinion, all of this, everything I say is my opinion, always. In my opinion, I walk around with X-ray vision today. because I know, I understand the failings of the passive investing model arguably better than anyone alive today. You know, if you want to say I'm bragging, well, that's not my intent. And if you want to say Shiller understands the failings better than I do, I'm fine with that. If you want to say Arnott does, I'm fine with that. But it's a small group, excuse me, it's a small group of people who understand the failings of passive investing as well as I do. I do believe that's a fair statement. And I think an argument can be made that I understand things about this. There are obviously many, many things that Shiller understands that I don't have a clue about. And there are many, many things that Bogle understands that I don't have a clue about. That's goes without saying, really. It's so obvious. But I believe there are things that I understand about the failings of passive investing that Shiller himself doesn't understand. Because I've seen people, I've seen the effect on people. When you go to discussion boards, you see how investing works in the real world with people, not in the classroom, the real world. And I've seen what it does to people. And I think that's 70% of the deal. So, you know, I see those things and I've developed, I'd say, I think of it as a kind of x-ray vision. So I read an article like the Bogle article and I just zero in on these things. I don't even study these articles. These things just pop into my head and I take out a pen and I scribble down notes for a podcast. That's really the way it works because I see these things instantly. I just zero in on them because I've developed the ability to look at the world through the eyes of someone who believes in the rational investing model of stock investing, not the passive investing model. And they are totally different models, totally different heads, totally different worlds. So here's what jumped out at me. Bogle says, I've read this already, I'll just repeat it. He says, we can't be sure whether our plummeting market, A, has yet to adequately anticipate the depth of the economic downturn, B, has already anticipated it, or C, has anticipated something much worse than what is likely to transpire. Does the flaw in that statement jump out at you? I hope it does. If it does, something I'm saying clicks. The flaw is Bogle is looking to the market to figure this stuff out. Bogle's saying, we don't know whether our market has anticipated the problems or not anticipated the problems. The market? What is this mysterious market he's looking to figure everything out for him? What is the market? The market is us. We are the market. People who own stocks. Bogle is the market. Rob Bennett's the market. Shiller's the market. Bernstein's the market. Graney's the market. Lindauer's the market. You are the market. He's talking, he's made it all artificial. This is what passive investors do. It all starts with that efficient market theory. The theory has a lot of good to it. I don't know how to say it. It has an assumption in it that is false. Using assumptions can help when you're trying to learn something, because you hold one thing steady and you examine other things. But when you start thinking the assumptions are true, you can get yourself in a whole lot of trouble. And the assumption of the efficient market theory is that investing is rational. And if it were rational, everything else follows. Everything Bogle says is gold. Everything the passive investing dogmatists say is gold. If that assumption is true. But it's not true. So we always come back to that. The market is people. People are emotional, not 100% rational. So the market is emotional. So when he talks about, what's he talking about? The market, did the market adequately anticipate the depth of the economic downturn? The market doesn't have a clue. The market doesn't know the future. All the market knows is today. The market knows today that the market's a whole big bunch more scared about stocks than it was 15 months ago. The market knows that. So the market was insanely overvalued 15 months ago, and the market ain't insanely overvalued today. The market is priced fairly today. The market gets that much, and that's a big plus, to be sure. The market doesn't know what's going to happen a year from now. How could the quote-unquote market know this? It's the people who comprise the market that determine this. What he's really saying is, we can't be sure whether we believe that the economic downturn is going to get worse or better or stay the same. We can't be sure whether we believe it's going to get worse or not. Well, we can't be sure what we know. On one hand, it's the dumbest thing you can imagine. It's just an incredibly dumb statement and from a very smart man. On the other, if you look at it a different way, it's genius. If you see it through the eyes of a rational investor, there's genius in it, because what he's saying is, we don't know what we know. And that is it. We don't know what we know because we're not rational. If we were just computers on legs, we would know what we know. We would just, compute the information. Here's what we know. We'd print it all out on a piece of paper, and that's what we know. But humans aren't like that. Humans don't know what humans know, because we've got different layers of consciousness. We block out information. We engage in self-denial. So we know things that we don't know. That's the mystery. That's the riddle. That's why there are stock crashes. Because when prices are going up, we know it's dangerous as all get out. We all know this. Anyone over the age of 7 can figure out that when stocks go up 30% a year, it's not real. That the money is being borrowed from the future. You don't need an IQ of 140 to figure that one out. So we knew that we were destroying our futures back in the 1990s. But we also didn't know it. We blocked it out because we wanted to participate in that sick bull market. So we knew and we didn't know. And today the same thing is true. We know that we've made mistakes. Bogle knows he's made mistakes. He knows this passive investing nonsense doesn't add up. He knows it as well as Rob Bennett knows it. But he also doesn't know it. He knows it on some level of consciousness, but he can't let that in because it's too painful. So he knows it and he doesn't know it. So talking about what is the market going to do is talking gibberish. The market's going to do whatever we choose to have it do. The market's going to do whatever we let in. And see, this is where you get to the guts of it. How do we get out of this mess? We have to develop self-knowledge. We have to start talking about investing not as if it's an intellectual endeavor. We need to start understanding that investing is an emotional endeavor, primarily an emotional endeavor. And the trick is coming to know what we already know. There's nothing out there we need to learn. It's all self-evident to anyone willing to open their eyes. But can we let it in? Well, that's a different story. The future of investing is growing up. This is what it means to be a grown-up. They talk all the time about, do you believe in the Easter Bunny? Do you believe in Santa Claus? Whatever it is. Well, the world of a child is a magical world where, someone puts presents under the Christmas tree for you. And it's a man who comes down a chimney and rides, reindeer. And I think there's something beautiful in that. But I don't think it's beautiful if a grown-up believes it. I that's dangerous. That's irresponsible. In other words, at some point you have to, there would be no trees. There would be no presents under the Christmas tree if the parents believed in Santa Claus. The parents have to go out and buy the presents and wrap them up and put them under the tree. So the job of a child and a parent, it's a different job. And that's the way it is with investing. Passive investing is a child's view of how stock investing works. It's all a belief in magical powers that somehow, humans aren't rational, but somehow the market, which is made up of humans, gets it all right. Somehow this magical power comes into play and the price is always right. No. We set the price. If we choose to be rational, then yes, the market price is rational. If we choose to live in a world of make-believe, we get prices like what we saw in the 1990s. And then we suffer the sorts of consequences we're suffering today. The future of investing is growing up, taking on responsibility, and caring about people other than ourselves. This is why I say we need to look at the man in the mirror. We need to stop pointing the finger at all the bad people who did this to us. There were some bad people, probably. And, you know, if there are government agencies who have the job of, you know, tracking these people down and proving a case against them, and that's all fine and good. But that's not the main show. The main show is, what can we do to make sure that we never, ever, 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 ever experience a bull market like what we experienced in the 1990s? We did that. John Bogle didn't do it to us. You know, Bernie Madoff didn't do it to us. We did that to us. We let them do it to us. Certainly, you know, Madoff made some claims that didn't hold up. Bogle's made some claims that didn't hold up. You know, thousands of others have made claims that don't hold up. But we let them get away with it. So it was a group project. We need to change that. And when we change that, we never again have these sort of price shocks. And we never again have these big recessions. And we never again threaten, you know, put the economy in a place where it could head into a depression. We do this stuff. Not some boogeyman. We all need to grow up. We all need to take responsibility, and we all need to care about others. You can't invest, you know, people, I get this all the time. People say, Rob, can't you just give me your stock tips? Yeah, I can give you stock tips. But stock tips ain't going to work, because I can give you the, you know, I could tell you in 1996, the market was insanely overvalued, but, you know, get out of stocks was a good stock tip. But I couldn't tell you when it was going to pay off. I couldn't tell you whether the crash was going to come in 97 or 98 or 99 or 2008. Because it depended on what my fellow investors did. And I don't have power over them. I can tell you it's going to crash because it has to crash. But I can't tell you when. That's a decision we make collectively. And so if I don't want this economy to go into a depression, and I do not, I need to do what I can to educate my fellow investors about how stock investing really works. And I have to, you know, I can't just pretend there's some mystical market out there that does this stuff to us, that anticipates what's going to happen. There is no Santa Claus, John Bogle. There is no Easter Bunny. There is no Tooth Fairy. I hope my boys can't overhear. Well, I hope the youngest one can't overhear. Doesn't overhear. I hope I'm not saying this too loud. These things don't. There is no market, John Bogle, that is going to adequately anticipate the depth of the economic downturn. There is no market. It's people. It's people. It's millions of people. And those people read your books, John Bogle. So if you want those people to adequately anticipate things, give them the information they need to have to do so. Tell them about valuations. Tell them about Shiller's research. Tell them about Rob Arnott's research. Tell them about the stock return predictor. Tell them about the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. Then they will know. Then they will understand. Then they will adequately anticipate the depth of the economic downturn. There is nothing to anticipate. The downturn depends on what we do. If we help restore confidence in the stock market, the downturn doesn't need to get any worse. If we keep playing mind games with people, word games, it probably will get a lot worse. If you look at earlier times when we went to insane price levels, the three earlier occasions, things got a lot worse. Valuations fell to half of the level they're at today. So if we keep playing games, if we keep pointing fingers, we may well see another 50% price crash sometime over the next 5, 6, 7 years. But we don't. There's no law of the universe saying we have to do that, is there? Is there anything to stop us from starting here, starting now, talking about the realities? Telling people about the errors in the old school studies, telling people about what the historical data says, about whether valuations affect long-term returns or not, telling people that 200 investing researchers were asked whether they believed in the efficient market theory and not one raised his or her hand. If you know, Rob Bennett says that on his website, but there's only so many people that read Rob Bennett's website. There's a whole big bunch more people that read an article at indexuniverse.com with John Bogle's name on it. So I would like, this is just me. You can take it or leave it, John Bogle, but I'd like to have your next article focus on that little fact. Why do you think it is that when Rob Arnott asked 200 researchers in the investing field whether they believed in the efficient market theory, not one raised his or her hand? And then when he asked us the follow-up question, are you going to base the research you do when you get back to the office on Monday morning on the efficient market theory? Almost all of them raised their hand. Please explain. What's going on here? And if you don't know the answer, fine. Write an article saying, Rob Bennett asked this question. You know, or don't say Rob Bennett asked it. Just do it. I don't care. Write an article saying this question was posed to me. You know, blame it on the bogleheads.org if you want. You know, people at bogleheads.org are asking questions. And they want to know, why is it the researchers all agree, you know, most agree that the efficient market theory doesn't work, but yet they use it in their research. Why? And I'm John Bogle, and I don't know the answer. I can't figure it out. I'm stumped. You know, I'm stumped. There was a girl in my law school class. We did something called moot court, and this was first year law school. And this was a friend of mine. I liked her a lot, but I mean, we didn't date or anything. But I liked her. You know, she was just in our group that we studied together and stuff. But I liked her. I liked her spirit a lot. But she, you know, we had to do moot court, and you had to prepare this big argument, and the judges were able to ask you questions, you know, to throw you off, and you know, so it's sort of a game, you know, and the judges asked her some question, and she wasn't prepared, she didn't know the answer, and she said, "Your Honor," you know, they're pretending to be judges, you know, "Your Honor, I'm stumped," you know. And of course, you're not supposed to do that, you know, you lose lots of points if you say you're supposed to fake it. And she just said, you know, change the subject, you know, which is what, of course, real lawyers do. If you appear before court and you don't know the answer, you know, you have to say something. It sounds intelligent. And that's part of the game of being a lawyer. But she just says, "Your Honor, I'm stumped." Yeah, that's what we need. Instead of all acting like lawyers, like we know it all, can we just drop the pose and just, you know, we've suffered, you know, Bogle himself says we've suffered a $9 trillion crash. Can we just acknowledge that maybe we don't know everything? That would be the start to the healing process. That's Rob Bennett's take. I need to wrap it up, but I'm going to go back to my, I discussed this analogy before. I like it. So I'm going to go back to it just a little bit. But I brought up the analogy of a man who has cheated on his wife. You know, he's lied. You know, he's failed to honor his marriage vows. And he's trying to win back her trust. And, you know, what I said is, if he gives these BS, you know, there are all these BS answers. You know, "Oh, it didn't mean a thing. Didn't mean a thing." That's going to solve the problem? You know, unless his wife is real dumb, that's not going to solve the problem. Or real desperate. "It didn't mean a thing." Well, what does that say about her? You know, what does that say about the wife? "It didn't mean a thing. I violated all my promises to you, but it didn't mean a thing. I just did it. Who knows why?" That's not the answer. And that's what they're telling us. That's what these big shot experts are telling us today. They're trotting out the same old BS explanations we've heard 5,000 times before. Timing doesn't work. Buy and hold. Stay the course. Stocks for the long run. We know all that. We also know it doesn't work. Can you please try to come up with something new? At least show us the respect of coming up with something new. And I think that's how that wife would feel if she heard that. Now, you know, what's a good answer to the question? You see, that's what we need to be thinking about. What is it that would win the wife's trust? You can't say, I didn't do it. She knows you did it. So that's not going to work. What would work? Now, obviously, you know, the answer is you have to tell the truth. And I don't, you know, different people that have different affairs, there's all sorts of different reasons. So I can't say what the truth is. But I'll give a hypothetical answer that I think could work. I think a man could say, and of course this could work with the woman cheating as well. I'm doing it from the man's standpoint because that's what I am. But it works either way. The question is, how do you restore trust when trust has been broken? Trust has been broken between middle-class investors and the experts. Trust has been broken. That's my point here. The job is to restore trust, and I don't think pointing fingers does it. You know, it's like saying, oh, you know, she was so sexy. You know, I couldn't resist. And she flaunted it. She put herself in my face. Well, yeah, that's real reassuring. That's pointing fingers at other people. Look in the mirror. What did you do wrong? Now, an answer that I think might fly, ultimately, is, you know, if it's true, it has to be true. But just say it's true. You know, you say, I mean, I'll use my wife, and I'm getting on delicate territory here, but I'll do it. I love my wife. She's something I've always felt bad about. She's very skilled. We all have our skills. I have no skill at art whatsoever. My wife is very skilled at art, just naturally. But she wasn't able to study it. I think she would have liked to have studied it, and her family couldn't afford that. You know, she was from a big family. They didn't have a lot of money. So she never studied it, so she never really developed the talent to any great extent. And I've always encouraged her to do things like take lessons today because she's got this talent, and I think it hurts to have a talent and not use it. And she does that to some extent today, and that's good. But she's never done it to the extent I would like. My wife is very intelligent, and she doesn't always recognize that because she doesn't feel she's good at book learning. And I don't think she was encouraged enough. And but, you know, sometimes we'll read the same book, and I'll talk to her about it, and she'll come up with insights that I, you know, went totally over my head. So I'm like, I get angry, you know, if she say something, you know, disparaging her own intelligence, because I'm like, maybe you don't, you know, there are different kinds of intelligence, so it may well be that some types she's not that great in, but she's clearly intelligent, you know, depending on how you define it. So I'll get angry about that sort of thing and just say, look, I don't want to hear that. You know, that frustrates me. That annoys me to hear you say that. And so just say, you know, that she had an affair. And what thing could she say to win my confidence? Well, if she were to say to me, this man, you know, appreciated my artistic skills or appreciated in a way that you never could because, you know, you don't have those skills. He somehow saw things you couldn't see, or he appreciated my intellect in a way that, you know, you say you do, but there's a history there, and you know, somehow it was different. When he praised me, it was somebody, you know, you might just be saying it because you love me, and he's saying it because he, you know, he really sees it. I mean, this is a little bit crazy, but that's the way humans are. You know, our emotions are based on things that are a little crazy. We're infantile sometimes, almost. Now, if she gave that story, I'm not saying that I'd say, oh, all's forgiven, you know, no problem. You know, no problem. But if she gave that story and I knew her well enough that it had the ring of truth to it, it seemed like it could be true, that's where the healing process can begin. Because it would click. I'd say, well, she did a terrible thing. You know, she did wrong. But she's acknowledging that. And it seems believable to me that there's some honesty here. That's how you can patch things up. Over time, not overnight, but over time, you can begin a healing process. And the same way if it's the man. You know, that's the story you would need to tell to your wife. It would have to be true on a deep level to regain her trust and to rebuild the marriage. Well, that's what we need to hear from our experts, our investing experts. They're not experts. I always put the word in quotes because they're not experts. Passive investing could never have become as popular as it has become in the past 30 years if these people were experts. The flaws in passive investing are very obvious. They're not obvious to the people who believe in it, of course, but they're obvious to the people who don't believe in it. They're obvious as day. And that's why you can read a book like Irrational Exuberance, which is filled with insight and knowledge and historical data, and have it say the opposite of things you read in A Random Walk Down Wall Street or Stocks for the Long Run or Common Sense on Mutual Funds or whatever else. If we were experts, we wouldn't have opposite viewpoints. We would know the truth about these. These aren't sophisticated points being made. They're the basics. They're the ABCs. Do valuations affect long-term returns or not? Does long-term timing work or not? Is the safe withdrawal rate a stable number or a changing number? Which is it? These are the ABCs of stock investing. And there's no agreement on this. 90% of the experts say one thing, but 10% say the opposite. So they're not experts. I say neither group is expert. I am in the 10%. I'm in that camp. I believe that that camp is right. But I don't really think we're experts, because to really be experts, humans learn from other humans. And we need to be able to bounce our ideas off of the passive investing people in order to become real experts. And that means the passive investing people need to stop being so defensive, start acknowledging they've gotten some things wrong. And that's how we all sort of get thrown together and we work it out and we figure out the realities. So I'm hoping for something from John Bogle other than what I saw in this article at indexuniverse.com. And, I think he needs to learn a little humility. And Bogle himself has advocated humility in some of his books. So Bogle himself knows this. Again, he knows it and he doesn't know it. And we need to stop pointing the finger at others. We gain more by looking at the man in the mirror. We need to stop thinking that the market is this outside force, this monster that bears down on us. The market is us. So we need to change ourselves. That's the change that works. And I think we really need to point the finger at passive investing, because not in a mean-spirited way, but we need to recognize that it is passive investing that has caused us to be so non-self-reflective. What we need in investing is to look at how we go about making decisions, how we go at believing what we believe. And passive investing teaches us not to do that, because the only way you become aware of the emotional side of investing is through studying valuations. Valuations are emotions. That's what causes overvaluation, is emotion. So we need to look at valuations, and passive investing says valuations don't matter. You leave your stock allocation the same no matter what. So it's the passive part of passive investing that is the whole problem. And the whole economic problem, well, not the whole economic problem, but the primary cause of the economic problem is passive investing. It's the overvaluation of the market reached such insane levels that returning to reality had to cause a huge recession, if not a depression. And that's what Bogle's missing. He's looking at the $9 trillion and he's saying that number's impossible. That's not rational at all. And of course he's right. But he's drawing the wrong conclusion. The conclusion he should draw is, if the market could be so wrong in the price that it set 15 months ago, the market isn't efficient in the short term, even a tiny little bit. That's the conclusion that a rational person would come to. But Bogle, as smart as he is not capable of full rationality today, because he is emotionally committed to the passive investing model. We, us Bogle heads, need to help him. We need to guide him to learning what he already knows, because Bogle is one of the lead advocates of rational investing. And if we can get him to understand what he already knows on some level of consciousness, we can get Bogle to give the speech that he needs to give for all the rest of us to know it. It's all a chain. It's all connected. It's a community problem. It's not a problem that any one of us is smart enough to solve on his or her own. We need to work together to heal the wounds that are self-imposed by our too easy acceptance of passive investing in earlier days. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.